Yeah, I feel like I should put in a disclaimer at the beginning of this one. Like, I should probably, like, record that now.
You want to record a disclaimer right now?
Yeah.
Do you want to record a disclaimer for this episode that people are about to listen to right now?
That it's maybe not going to make any sense.
The episode? Yeah. I hope the episode makes sense. I thought you were just going to talk about sound quality.
No, no, no. Okay, so, yeah. So, basically, we recorded this episode, and we had some new gear, and some of it didn't quite work. So we had a problem with Chris's microphone, and...
Well, it's also the first time that we Skype somebody in.
Yeah.
We should point out, and that has its own... You know, the internet seems like it's full of amazing and easy to do things, but...
It's a little technically challenging, so
right.
We kind of made it work, but we did have to switch between the Skype recording and his microphone. So when the sound quality jumps around in the episode, it's because we're switching between the best takes. So
Sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But the content's good, so enjoy. Hello and welcome to Fantasy Outliers, the podcast brought to you by FantasyOutliers.com. We're the team that is helping bring data to fantasy sports. We're also the place where data and fantasy sports collide. We're trying on some different clothes here and there, but thanks for coming back for episode 3. I'm Dave.
And I'm also Dave.
And we have a special guest this week to join us to celebrate making it to our third episode. It's Chris Seal, our founder, our four-star general in charge.
Yo.
Hey. Welcome.
Hey, Chris.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to your show, Chris.
Yeah. Welcome to the thing you started.
It's not often that you get to be invited to a podcast on a company, that's part of a company that you founded, and then you feel honored being on it. Wait, that was stupid.
That sounds good. I like it. Chris, we can tell you're a humble and honored person.
We want them to know who the real you is.
Yeah, exactly.
So just keep saying stupid things and we'll leave it all in.
Yeah, and you know, Dave and I have gotten such a good rapport going after two podcast episodes and 20 years of friendship that we thought we'd just throw somebody else in the mix and see what happens.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if we've mentioned this. Well, we have mentioned this a bunch of times. You're actually my brother.
Not Dave, me.
Not
Chris
you.
Is your brother.
Chris is my brother.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's, yes, I know everyone here very, very well.
Perfect. Chris and I are still feeling each other out a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we got the middleman, you know, he vouches for you. So we're cool.
It's all good. Dave and I like to start every podcast with 30 seconds of just silence where we just intently stare at each other across my basement.
We just kind of meditate for a second.
Yeah.
Just get in the zone.
I just want us to get centered and really kind of, get in touch with each other. It's been a week since we've talked. I want to make sure that, you know, we're aligned
spiritually
and
emotionally.
Yeah. I want to make sure that our fantasies are all aligned. That's right. Yeah, that's good.
This is getting weird.
It's a good mantra. Well, you're not in the same room with us, so it can't be that weird. So we brought Chris on the show today because we wanted to talk a little bit more about... We've been getting some questions from friends and new friends that have been listening to the podcast just about the way that Fantasy Outliers works, kind of the history, why it started, what we're trying to do. And we thought there was kind of nobody better to bring on to answer those questions kind of with us through a discussion than the man with the vision himself, Chris. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to do this a little bit of like interview style. Dave and I are going to pretend like we don't know the answers to these questions. We might not know the answers to some of them.
We definitely don't know the answers to some of them.
Yeah, because we're not math geniuses like Chris is. But
I'm not a math genius. I'm sorry.
Not a math genius? Well, how would you? Okay, so why don't we start with that? So why don't we talk a little bit about what your background is in general? You know, the skills that kind of led you to this point.
Okay. So I say I'm not a math genius, meaning that I'm not a mathematician. I'm not coming up with new algorithms. I'm not like creating new formulas. I'm not the next Isaac Newton or Einstein, like, right. But I know how to use what's been done before in creative ways. So, let's see, I was a physics and music theory major in undergrad. I was in music composition for a long time. I have a master's degree in music composition. And to me, a lot of my creativity really, like I really honed in on my creative problem solving skills by like creating commercial underscores for advertisements and things like that.
Right.
Just trying to meet whatever demands a client needs. Like, we want something with all major chords that sounds orange, or I don't know.
Right. You know what, Chris? I have been that person on the other line of the on the other end of the phone, talking to the music composition people, being like, "Can you make it sound more like the Arcade Fire and also less like the Arcade Fire at the same time?"
I love that direction.
It's great.
We need it to be bigger and smaller at the same time.
Exactly. We're tough.
That stuff makes sense, but I feel like you're the worst nightmare, right? Because you know a little bit about music. So you know enough to like think you know what to say specifically.
To be super annoying to the person who's actually the expert.
Yeah, I try. Sometimes I hope that stuff helps me be like, hey, I'm on the same page as you. I know these clients, they ask crazy stuff. I'm just the person who has to tell you what it means. But seriously, you have to do it.
Yeah, but seriously, do this crazy thing.
And I know it's
about.
Not that hard, so you have to do it.
Yeah.
Just move it over two beats. Just move it two beats. All right. So that's cool. So you started out in kind of a different place than I think a lot of people would think, you know, having spent time in music and, like you said, working on kind of creative problem solving. When you kind of decided that you wanted to try something else out, you ended up in what you've described. You know, you said you're a data scientist. I think it'd be nice to know kind of what even that means kind of in general and kind of even what your day-to-day life is like as someone who does that as a job.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know what data science is. I mean, it sounds cool, right?
It definitely sounds very cool.
It's very popular.
I've been telling a lot of people I'm working with a data scientist now, and people are like, ooh. Yeah.
No, my probably shouldn't say this. My in-laws, like, when they heard that I was changing careers into data science, they were super happy about it, you know, being...
Yeah. So he'll be able to provide now that he's no longer a musician, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Or... that's the impression you get when you tell people, right?
Right. So, Chris, when you talk about being a data scientist, can you give us an example of the type of project that you might be working on in your day job so people can get a sense of kind of what it is that you do?
Sure. So, so far I've been involved in a pretty diverse set of projects. I've done signal processing where classified what happens and say, like, to use an example, say what happens in an electrical signal. Try to figure out, like, is it the refrigerator or the microwave? That's not the use case that I exactly had. But then another type of project is we've analyzed League of Legends data, an online game where there's like 5v5. It's 70 million people play it. We've looked at their publicly available data and just tried to understand if we can glean any insights about the psychological behavior of teams in that data.
So what are you specifically, like, what are you hoping to learn from that analysis? How people interact together? I mean, did you say there were 5-on-5 teams?
Yeah, League of Legends is sort of like basketball. It's 5-on-5. The players have different, they play against each other in this sort of elaborate, like, capture the flag game.
Okay.
I'm going to sound like a total noob to any of our fans who actually like League of Legends.
You nerds
but,
are going to have to explain this to me. Right. I don't even know what you're talking about.
But it's a super popular game. And, you know, we were talking about this another time, Chris. And I think, did you say that you were basically analyzing that data to see if you could learn anything about the way that people could work together in general, in kind of real life?
Yeah, exactly. It's exploratory. So one of the benefits of massive online data sets is that you don't really have to worry about sample size as much. So, I mean, you can explore and try a lot of things, right? So one of the things we were looking into is see if you can figure out what types of people are more altruistic than others, for example. So So like people who gave more assists per their particular situation at the time, and try to see if you have a combination, like across the whole team, if you have those kind of people, what happens, right? And that's just one example.
So you're kind of looking at, you're looking at like team dynamics and try to identify different sort of personalities or characteristics within different players to try to see what different team dynamics are happening or how that might, how they might interact to create maybe a more or less effective team.
Correct. Correct. And we're trying to use those insights to predict who's going to win the game. And you know, it's exploratory. We're not really sure what we can and what we can't figure out, but that's why we're researching it.
Yeah. That's interesting.
All right, so let's talk about how you kind of came to fantasy football and where that kind of led us to today. So a couple years ago, Dave and I started a new league together. We wanted to get together a group of friends that had a chance to play fantasy sports against each other. And I think that we had a bunch of local people the first year, and then the second year we decided we wanted to grab some new folks to join the league. And that's kind of where you
quit.
Yeah, people quit, and we wanted to find some people to fill in for them, right? So, had you played fantasy before then? I don't remember.
No, you guys were... I lost my fantasy virginity to you guys.
Wow. Okay. So did you know much about fantasy before? I mean, I think this was 2015 or 2014, maybe?
No, I didn't at all. Really?
Yeah, I don't remember. You had heard me talk about playing in years past, but I don't think you had ever... I mean, you were a total noob. I was teaching you what to do and talking about strategy and what different players were good for and all that kind of stuff in your first year.
Every Tuesday night I would like call you up and we'd have like a 30-minute conversation about the waiver wire.
Yeah, exactly. Who should I pick up?
So... Needless to say, you kind of caught the bug, right? I mean, you did really well the first year. Yeah. I don't think that was the year where you totally crushed our souls. But then came the infamous year where you won, right?
Right. Yeah, the first year I could have won, but I dropped, what was it, Cam Newton? He was on my bench in 2014, and I dropped him for no reason and picked up Joe Flacco. And the guy I was playing against picked him up because he knew he had a worse team than I did. And of course, he had one of his Cam Newton games where he scored like 40 points and ended up losing in the first round of the playoffs. So I'm not bitter or anything. But
boo. Wow, that is a pretty bad one.
Yeah.
I just as a way of a similar story, since Walter is upstairs barking because my wife is getting home. So I had a similar thing where I beat somebody in the finals of a league a couple years ago with a wide receiver that they dropped on the waiver wire that I picked up and started in the finals in the Super Bowl. Nice. And I think it was like Mike Evans in his rookie year where they were like, what? I just need to grab somebody else. And I was like, sure, I'll grab and start Mike Evans in a 4 wide receiver league. And just, you know, the guy only put up like 16 points or something, but it was enough to be the difference. Yeah. So,
wow.
Okay. So Chris, you did pretty good the first season you were with us. Then in 2015, the second season you were with us, things kind of changed. You were a man with a passion for fantasy football kind of awoken within you. And you kind of dominated us. You want to tell us a little bit about how rad 2015 was?
How bad it was?
No, how rad it was.
How rad it was.
Yeah. Well, that's our new segment, by the way. Rad or bad?
Rad or bad?
Yeah.
I like that. Except that I don't know if I want to take the premise that I'm using the word rad.
Okay. But, all right, let's dial it back, Chris.
Okay. All right.
Chris. Chris, can you tell us how well you did in 2015 and how it inspired you to do a little study about our league?
So 2015, I was in a data science boot camp at the time of the season. We actually, this is kind of interesting. We moved from Boulder, Colorado, back to my hometown, Cincinnati / Northern Kentucky, on July 1st. And as we were driving cross country, I got an email saying that I got accepted into Galvanize's first cohort of their data science immersive program, which started on July 6th. So we moved cross country, and then I left my wife for 3 months to go into this data science boot camp. So I'm at this data science boot camp, and all I'm doing is data science and fantasy sports or fantasy football. So I had like a hour-long commute on the train in the morning, and I would listen to a podcast, do some fantasy research, read a little bit about data science, and then, you know, same thing on the way home. So what ended up happening is I mean, look at the graphs. I was clearly an outlier that year. I mean...
Well, let's explain what you mean by look at the graphs.
No one has seen these graphs.
So you...
Not yet, at least.
Right. So if you want to see the graphs that Chris is talking about, basically what happened was at the end of the season, everybody wakes up. Because remember, fantasy football kind of ends right around Christmas. Basically, in between Christmas and New Year's is kind of when everything wraps up. So I wake up someday on vacation in between those two dates, and there's a nice email on our league mailing list from Chris that's basically the most on-fire trolling email I have ever gotten from someone that just explains through a number of analytical dimensions with graphs, dot graphs, line graphs, bar graphs, all kinds of things,
extensive.
Showing how awesome Chris's team was. And all the charts
and how
had
bad
that.
You were.
Yeah, and yeah. how... Oh, yes,
yeah.
yes.
It wasn't just we bragging. It was also just pointing out how awful some of the teams in our leagues were compared to what you actually did.
Exactly.
Well, especially because we had someone whose name in our league was league champion.
Yeah.
And they happened to be way below everybody else. So I couldn't let that one slide.
Yeah. Let's not talk about Peter because I'm still mad about the last 2 years. But anyway, so you sent out this email that was epic, and it's led to this tradition of like epic victory emails that have been great the last couple of years from the winners in our league. Nice tradition. Get good traditions in your league. Anyway, in your leagues. Anyway, so you woke up, you know, after doing this boot camp and after kind of sending this email out to us, and something clicked in there somewhere. Can you, what was that that kind of led to the next thing that you wanted to do?
You guys, I think that's what's led to a lot of things, honestly. I was talking to my brother, Dave, number one. You guys are both Dave number one.
This is my podcast. Yeah. I'm the number one Dave.
No, I don't know about that.
Yeah,
you,
I don't know
you don't
either.
Get the title just because you say so.
It's in my basement.
Mm, that's true.
Yeah. Anyway.
But I don't really know what to call you. My bro Dave. Right. He's bro Dave, you're beer Dave.
That's fair. How's
that? That's fine. Fair. Let's do that.
So he was just like, this is really cool. You could do something with this. Like, he was just fascinated by it. And I was like, okay. And you know what? I thought it was cool too, because we were figuring out like what actually happened that year. Because like I had my team, I played in a couple leagues, I knew how my players did, or I thought I knew how they did. We could get into like how you're biased in that too, but I didn't know like Devontae Freeman or whatever was awesome and a great find. He wasn't on any of my teams. So I guess I thought it was interesting to see, like, and I think that's the same for everybody who plays fantasy football. They don't, like, really have, like, a holistic bird's eye view into what is actually happening in competitive leagues. So I just thought it was cool. I love fantasy sports a little too much. I don't know. It's kind of geeky, but we just, like, jumped into the data and figured out what we could find from it and talked to my brother, bro Dave, and he'd be like, no, this is too complicated. This would be interesting. And sort of, he was like, kind of like the lead data scientist without really.
Was I? I don't know. Basically I was just trying to get you to see if you could figure out all this stuff that I wanted to know
right.
about fantasy football. And, you know, I've heard so many things over the years and all the other media sources that I just never was totally confident that it was correct.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to see if you could dig into it and figure yeah. it out.
But don't forget, you know, your background kind of plays into this a little bit too, because you're a product designer. So you're always going to be thinking about the best way to make
oh, sure.
things good for people.
Yeah.
Right. So Chris is doing this exploration. He started to look at many leagues instead of just our league, and he's finding stuff, and you're going, I don't think anybody's going to care about this. I think that we need to present this in a different way so it's compelling. Right. And then kind of like momentum begins to grow through this. The first thing that that Fantasy Outliers kind of did, you know, once it became sort of a thing with you two guys, was to kind of do all this backwards looking statistical analysis of multiple fantasy leagues, basically. I mean, some people would call that, you know, in science, it's called like a meta-analysis, right? Where we're not looking at one instance of data or data that we've created. We're looking at data from the world and putting it all together to look back and see kind of what happened.
And we're drawing a sample from a population, right?
Right.
And if our sample is, say, it's about 300 competitive leagues, they go through pretty as intensive a filtering process as I know how to do right now to get them into what leagues have the highest probability of being competitive leagues. But it's a sample size of about 300 most years and most league types.
Right.
So from that sample size, like a lot of classical statistics has shown that generalizes well to the real population, as long as you're sampling randomly, which we are.
Right. So I think that's super interesting too. So I just want to, like, as we end this part of the discussion, sort of where we're at right now is we've created this kind of analysis of what actually happens in fantasy leagues, so people can get a better understanding of what the universe of fantasy is really like, you know? And I think that's huge because
competitive fantasy.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I mean, it's a couple of things, because, like, I think we've talked a lot about how there's all this sort of anecdotal stories from analysts, from fantasy football media, you know, I'll put media in quotes a little bit there, but they are people who, you know, nobody is, like you said, taking a bird's eye view of kind of as of a statistically significant sample of fantasy leagues to be able to tell people what it's really like to play fantasy and what the rules of the road kind of really are.
And on top of that, we're biased. Our memory is biased. So
right.
So this is one example that comes to mind. So last year I drafted Matt Ryan, right? And at the beginning of the season, which is common in a lot of NFL teams, they do better at the beginning of the season. They score more points and then defenses adjust. So I remembered before I did the analysis, my memory of Matt Ryan last season was that he was just a baller, like absolute baller.
Right.
And then I looked at the data and he was like kind of slightly above average.
Right. Dave and I actually talked about Matt Ryan specifically on the first episode of this podcast, where we kind of pointed out that he was right around replacement level, still a good value because you could take him super late. But people, like you said, their memory is biased on what happened. So it's good to have objective benchmarks for what good performance in a competitive fantasy league looks like. And that's led to some of the insights that we've had, like, you know, the article that we have on our Medium blog, the one-third, two-third rule, talking about value in the draft, the article that Dave Seal just put up that's about how many points are enough to be competitive in a league and what's it mean to be in that kind of battle zone area so that you can measure how your team is doing week over week. Those are all these things about, like, shining a light into what it takes to actually compete in fantasy when maybe it's been kind of unclear what the real rules of the road were up until now.
Mm-hmm. Chris, did you just say that quarterbacks start off hot and then taper off towards the end of the year as defenses adjust?
So this is this is actually an article that I want to write. So we did, I did an analysis of weekly point performances by position throughout the course of the fantasy football regular season. And though, and you can see the especially that first week, quarterbacks are higher, running backs are higher, tight ends are higher, and it's slight. You know, it's like maybe a few points.
But it's holding to the entire league on average. Like you're seeing like a significant bump, a couple points in the first week or so of the year from those position groups.
It's only statistically significant for tight ends in the leagues that I can recall right now, but it's definitely a trend. You kind of have to look at the graph, but it starts out where all positions are above average, except for defense, obviously. And then it kind of goes down to average by like, I don't know, week three or four, stays there. And then there's like a little dip at, I don't know, six or 8 to 12. Maybe like 7 to 10. And then it starts to kind of come back up. We stopped it at week 13 because after that, it's hard to really. I mean, some people play their teams, some people don't.
We're not counting anything after 13.
Yeah. I mean, but so just as an example to the people to the listeners right now, this is the type of thing that Chris is constantly asking about and seeing if there are trends that we can analyze and turn into like actionable advice for people who are reading and listening.
Well, that's a good point because, you know, the data, there's a lot of information out there and there's a lot of ways you can slice the data, and those things are more or less, I'm going to say they're facts of, you know, shades of gray, I guess, because of how it's calculated and what's in the data.
Yeah.
But they're more or less facts, but it's really in, you know, some of it is actionable and some of it is not actionable.
Right.
Like we've talked about a bunch of things where, you know, what happens if this happens? Is there anything here? We think we see something in this data, and then we look at it and we're like, actually, there's nothing there. Like I don't see what you could possibly do with in fantasy with this particular finding or
like
whatever.
This might be true, but
it's not necessarily helpful. So yeah. I think it's a combination of, you know, looking at this stuff from a data perspective, seeing if there's anything interesting in there, and then being able to pull something practical out of it,
right?
That you can actually say, like, all right, I'm going to change the way I play because of X, Y, Z. This is going to be my new strategy.
The practical side of the early week boost, quote unquote, in offensive performance is the psychological side of it. Like, for example, I loved your guys' last episode, by the way. And you talked about TJ Yeldon and like how he was a disaster for your team, Harbaugh.
Totally.
But I remember last year he had a very good first and second week, maybe at least a very good first week. So the psychology is this guy is awesome. You know, I'm going to keep starting him. Well, then, you know, defenses adjust and the Jaguars aren't the most impenetrable team.
Right. They might not have the capability to adjust back, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, poor Jaguars.
So you end up the way our brain imperfectly remembers things is those like outliers kind of stand out. Whereas when you look at the course of a season, TJ Yeldon was terrible for teams.
Yeah.
So the actionable part of that first week boost is don't count on it too much. You know, maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but wait at least a few weeks before you really trust the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So just to kind of put a bow on this kind of first half of the discussion with Chris, we are looking at fantasy leagues at the largest level that we can so that we can educate and share the trends that we see and help turn them into actionable things that you can do to help you make better decisions about your teams because you understand a little bit better what actually goes on in fantasy leagues on a year-over-year basis, and you can kind of get away from the noise of one-week performance, small sample size, all that kind of stuff as best as we can. And I think that we all think that that's something that's pretty differentiated because people talk about things that have happened in the past anecdotally, and the stuff that Chris is exploring really moves away from that and bases it on actual exploration and study.
It's a lot less biased than than right. a lot of opinions that you hear.
Right. So,
and that doesn't okay. mean that you can't interpret the data your own way. It just gives you a better foundation to build, to interpret from.
Right. Yeah, that's totally true. And then, so the other part of what we were trying to work on here, or Chris is trying to work on here, is looking at new ways to think about predicting individual player performance, either over a full season. We're starting to look into some things about how can we build models that can help us do it on a weekly basis or a smaller time increment basis. So, Chris, do you want to talk a little bit about your kind of approach overall to predictions and maybe some of the way that the predictions that we might try are different from the ones that other people put out there?
Sure. So I don't think anyone is using machine learning the way we are. I know there are some companies that do simulations where they take random samples from historical distributions to try to simulate like what actually is going to happen in the game. And they've had some success with that. But that technique's been around a while. And I think machine learning is the new wave, so to speak. And then you have the way most people get their predictions, which is from writers and journalists. And you know, as far as I can tell, they're piecing together a story through some human intuition, a couple stats here and there, maybe some hype. Like, for example, Amir Abdullah in 2014 had a big preseason, I guess, and he went a little high in ADP and ended up being the worst running back as far as total right. season value that year from our metrics.
Would you say that our approach is a little more holistic statistically? I mean, we're not really cherry picking anything here. We're kind of putting it all in one bucket and
seeing what happens.
And seeing what happens, taking it all together rather than just, you know, picking out a couple of performances or one year or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not that we're quote unquote replacing human intuition. Like that still exists. We're just a human can only take into account a few variables at a time. Like, trust me, I've tried to make images that had, I don't know, five or six plus, even five or six dimensions in one image. And that's like almost impossible for people to understand. So you have to stick with like two or three dimensions at a time in a graph, usually. And that applies to how we think about things. So we tend to remember a few things, a handful of items, and then the rest becomes a feeling about the player. So the machine learning models aren't replacing it. It's just, this is what the model thinks. These are the pros and cons of what the model can and can't do. And maybe then combine it with your human intuition. So maybe you can make a better decision from there.
Is there a way that you could explain this, how this works in, so that I might understand it? And so people without a background in data science might be able to follow you.
Yeah. So there's a few different algorithms that are popular right now. There's neural networks, and we're not using those. We're using something called gradient boosting, which actually, the best way I can think to explain it is what I said in an interview. It's basically like you start out, it's like my relationship with my wife, right? I start out, I have my best guess as far as how I should behave. And then I make an error and I realize, you know, oh man, I messed up. What should I do to improve it? And then I improve, make another error, and then I improve. And I get like a little better and better each time. In theory, at least. So that's kind of the basic gist of how gradient boosting is set up. Now it's combining a bunch of decision trees. Should I explain what those are?
Yeah. What's a decision tree?
Okay.
We're leaving all the size in, just yeah, so you yeah. know.
Everything stays in right now.
All right. So a decision tree, one decision tree, is you basically split the data. So you start like visualize this. You start at the very top of a piece of paper, and you cut the data into two different parts. And at the very top, you cut it into two parts that are most different from each other. So say you're predicting housing prices. You cut it at, I don't know, neighborhood at the very top. Or say square footage, that's easy. Say things over this square footage do much better and have a much higher price than, you know, things below this square footage. Okay, so then you have two different data sets on the left and the right, respectively. And then for each one of those, respectively, you cut the data in a unique way to differentiate the data again. You know, like it's repetitive. So you're cutting on different things in each spot, and each by the time you get to the bottom of it, you've gone through this totally different path, where at the left side at the very bottom, there's a thing, different things are important than there are at the very right side of the bottom, or wherever spot on the bottom you end up.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. We're just trying to follow that.
Yeah. So basically it's like a, sounds a little bit like an evolution chart almost, where it's like, yeah, we have this source and then it branches off in all these different ways. And some of the branches lead nowhere and some of them lead to a prediction that actually makes sense. Is that accurate or is that not accurate?
They all lead to somewhere.
Okay.
There's always rows of data that correspond to individual nodes. Some of which are more important than others, I would say. But the story is different for each. I think that's the main point.
So why would it be creating a bunch of different trees? Like, what is the point of that?
That's a really good question. So. So if you only create one tree, your starting point is the same every time. So you're not getting some interesting things in the data.
There's no variation in what it's calculating.
And basically that's like in your previous example, that's like, we're going to have every tree start with square footage and we're never going to find out if neighborhood actually is more important,
right,
if you start sorting there.
But maybe the neighborhood is the most important,
or maybe
in some instances. Right. So
or maybe
it
it's just
have...
number of bedrooms.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
all
exactly.
different things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it creates,
that's exactly it.
It creates all of these variations, and that allows it to predict what different situations that might happen in the future, because it has a tree that maps to something that's a future possibility.
Right. So assuming that the data set doesn't just completely change in the future, you're basically asking how to make the model most predictive. Some of that is a little nitty gritty, but basically this is the beauty of machine learning, right? Is it tries, I don't know, billions of different ways to split the data in each particular node in each particular tree. And then it finds the best combination of those, to make it more predictive. So it and the best, given the best parameters, like the maximum number of depth of trees to use, the depth and number of minimum number of samples in a particular node, and so it trains and tests and trains and tests and iterates until it hones in on the most predictive thing. So we're training on, say, I don't know, 2000 to 2010 data and predicting on 2011. See how we did. Train and test on 2000 to 2011. Predict on 2012. See how we did. And it's performed pretty well. I mean, gradient boosting has won a fair amount of competitions on Kaggle, a data science competition platform. And it's done that because it's very good at taking into account the interactions in the data set.
So it's kind of taking, like in classical statistics, we have linear regression, right? Where basically, for every single interaction in the data set, you had to figure that out by hand and input that into the model. This is not taking any assumptions about the data itself. Like, it's not assuming that square footage is a normal distribution and whatever else. It's not assuming anything about the data. It's just figuring out where to split it and what is most important in different situations to be the most predictive. And it's, and there's different ways you can iterate through the data and, to others, but just being able to account for interactions in the data is really valuable. And it's honestly, it's one of the reasons that data science has taken off as much as it has, because we have that ability now with computational power.
So let's ask the question that everybody wants to know about. How does this help us in fantasy football? Like, what can we do with this that, you know, maybe other people aren't doing? What is this going to give us? What advantages could this give us that that you might not find somewhere else?
Right. Yeah. So this year, last year we had our quote unquote beta test, I guess. And we learned, and our models were actually pretty decent compared relative to how
the prediction models
improved. Yeah. Yeah. Our prediction models, our algorithms. And so what we're doing this year is, well, last year got into the playoffs and like 80-90% of leagues that use the prediction, so pretty good, but we didn't win anything, so we were about in that 70th to 80th percentile in most leagues, but of course that doesn't matter, right? You want to win, so we made a lot of adjustments, and this year we're looking at projected points per opportunity, separate from projected opportunities, and then that's separate from projected games played, which takes into account injury risk and suspensions and things like that, as well as some volatility score. So basically, where someone who's ranking players will like be able to brag about people they hit on and people they missed on, and you know, maybe they missed on some people, what we'll be able to do is say, we were wrong by this much, and hey, this player got injured, but we were right because of their points per opportunity was close. So we'll be able to diagnose it way better than just like a simple ranking that most people use.
Cool. And so what that's going to do is, you know, the predictions we are, you know, are slated to come out in a few weeks here. So people will get to look at them at some point. We haven't figured out how we're going to show them to people yet. It might be through pieces. It might be through different ways to access it. We'll figure that out down the road, but we are you know, thinking a lot about helping people do things like, hey, who's this person in later rounds of your draft who might really have the opportunity to do something more, you know, a lot more this year than they did last year? Who is, you know, somebody that you should consider for a spot start? Like, is that the type of thing that we'd probably even be able to get to, you think? Or are we still looking at, like, draft and that's kind of it?
No, I think... So, for example, in the later rounds, we'll have projected points per opportunity. So that's sort of independent of their opportunities. So, for example, players on high-powered offenses or whatever it is, if they do get playing time, we think they're going to be super valuable. So, you know, maybe if someone at the beginning of the season has a clear path to playing or something like that, you know, you could make the decision to take that calculated risk. Like, okay, this player is projected to have a high points per opportunity. The starting running back is 30 years old or something like that. Maybe he's going to get hurt. not to like bet on someone getting hurt, but, you know, it's, you got to do what you got to do, right?
And so when you talk about points per opportunity, do you feel like that's sort of a proxy for like skill, kind of? Like, we think this person has a lot of potential, right? And that's separate from the situation that they're in. So you're trying to separate some of these things that kind of bedevil fantasy analysts, where they're like, I really love this guy, but we don't know if he's going to get a chance to actually do stuff, you know what I mean, to actually get in the games. And so what you're trying to do is have these factors that are like, we think they're going to have this many starts, snaps. We think they're going to have this many opportunities per game. And we think that they'll produce this many points per opportunity. It's kind of separating these things so people can make decisions based on what they also think might change about a given player's situation.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like, for the example of like just watching tape and saying like, well, this guy looks good on tape. Okay, well, that's great, but that's sort of an unfalsifiable way to look at it. Like, okay, he's good, but Todd Gurley last year, he's a great player. Well, I still think he's a great player, and he still is a good player, but he sucks. Like, you shouldn't have drafted him in the first round.
Thanks. Why didn't you tell me that last year?
I think I did, didn't I?
I think the predictions actually did, and I took him anyway in one league, in the league that we're in together. But I guess, so let me just butt in here for 1 second. What I think is interesting, what you're saying, is that we're going to put this data out there, and we are totally okay with it being wrong because we are putting it out there, and we can also be proven wrong, but we can also be proven right. And what you said a moment ago was we can also show how much we were wrong by, and we hope that understanding that stuff will help us make the models better in the future.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And we can also estimate the amount that we think the model is going to be wrong on average, because we have our training data set, right? We don't have to train the model on 100% of the data set. We can train it on 90% and see how well it does on the other 10, and then iterate through that 10 times and see what the average error rate is.
Okay, let's just stop for 1 second, because I'm gonna play that back to you. So the way that you try to improve how good the model is by setting aside part of the data set, using 90% of the data to educate the model, to train the model is the term that you used. And then what you do is run it on the other 10% of data that already exists to see how close the predictions fit to what actually exists in that other 10%.
Yeah. So that, like, when we're trying to find the best model, that's the process that we use. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into like best practices and what to do for that case and things like that. But in the end, we train the model on all of the data, or all the data that we think is appropriate, or whatever. I mean, things in the NFL, you know, evolve over time. So, whether we go back to 1992, I don't know, for example, but we train on all of it. It gets the biggest possible sample size before we actually make the final predictions. Right. But we test its average error rate. We get some idea of that. Like, I mean, does Matthew Berry know what his average error rate is for each particular diagnostic of each individual performer's or each individual player's performance? I mean,
yeah, no, it, I mean,
it's
so,
a different type of,
yeah, it's
way.
A totally different type of thing. Like, I love Matthew Berry, big fan. Yeah. If you ever happen to hear this podcast, Matthew, but
no,
like,
I,
we're
great.
Totally trying to do a different thing, right? And so I think that's part of the reason that you wanted to even start this, was because you felt like you just had a different perspective from what was out there.
And the only reason I'm naming him is because he's like the biggest name that I can
super
think
well
of
known. Yeah,
makes way more money than I'll ever make in my life. So, right. I mean, he's got his thing going, but
right.
we're trying to augment that.
Right. So just to kind of, you know, set this part of the discussion aside, just so we're clear, basically the two goals that we have, if you ever want to think about like, why, what should I go check out Fantasy Outliers for content wise? It's the first half that we talked about here is this kind of analysis of leagues at the 10,000 foot level. And then also what Chris was just talking about is this idea of, we're going to look at predictions at the individual player level and figure out how to get the best prediction model that we can get going. And we think that our approach is differentiated from other people who have been in the industry longer, just because we're kind of coming at it from a different approach. And so those are kind of the two main things that Fantasy Outliers is really doing. Is that fair?
And we're having a good time too. So, I mean, we're not just like some cold, you know, predictive analytics company that gives you numbers and gets out of, I mean, we have you guys, right? You guys are
right.
Cool.
Well, that's what we're supposed to be doing. Yeah.
So working
on
it.
The third thing is trying to turn the insights from that into something that people understand and enjoy using, of course. And so that's why we have all of our friends on the podcast here. All right. So we've covered pretty much as much as we can cover in a single podcast here. We don't want to go too much deeper into the science that's behind what Chris is working on. But I will say that if you are a person who's got similar skills to Chris, if you're someone who's passionate about fantasy football, if you're someone who wants to try your hand at making content, if you're a data scientist, a web developer, a graphic designer who can help us, a writer. Yeah, we're looking for more people to come and help join the team who want to help us kind of build around the ideas that Chris and Mark, our other data scientists, are kind of building together. We're on a mission to kind of make fantasy sports analytics better. And if you want to join us on that mission, then we're welcome to it. So reach out to us, you know, podcast@fantasyoutliers.com is the email address that you can hit us up at. That's a podcast@fantasyoutliers.com. You can also find us through our Medium articles. You could leave comments on the podcast, and, you know, any kind of ratings are helpful to get us kind of up the charts as far as getting more listeners and more exposure to people to join us on our kind of journey that we're working on here. So thanks for joining us for the third podcast, and thanks for taking some time to join us today, Chris, away from your busy math schedule.
Hey, I'm honored to be on here. I mean, I listened to you guys last podcast, and it was seriously one of the most informative fantasy football podcasts I'd heard in a while.
Well,
so
good, because it came from all your data.
Yeah, it came from your ideas. We're just trying to make you proud, Coach.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, I'm just the middleman.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep, thank you. We'll be back soon.
Bye.